you're welcome back to The Late Debate this evening. You can contact the programme by text 51551, email latedebate at rte.ie, and you can follow us and engage on Twitter at latedebaterte. Joining me in studio this evening is Owen Murphy of Fine Gael, Timmy Dooley of Fianna Fáil, Peter Matthews, Independent TD in Dublin South, Eamon Ryan of the Green Party and former Minister for Communications, and Niamh Lyons, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. Well, Dáil business was brought to a shuddering halt today when Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin TDs walked in unison out of the chamber and onto the plinth for a photo opportunity and a round of interviews. They were incensed that a Dáil debate about an inquiry into Gortha operations in the Cavan Monaghan district was cancelled by the Ceann Comhairle. Now, I'll come to the substance of this in just a second, but Timmy Dooley, were we seeing the next prospective coalition in Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, perhaps?
No, this has happened before. When the government decided to railroad the legislation establishing Irish Water through the Dáil in 6 hours, Fianna Fáil at the time felt that it was wrong to guillotine that legislation. And at the time, ourselves... I just need to make the point that ourselves, Sinn Féin and the Independents, on that occasion said, well, the only protest that we can show to the shambolic way that you're treating Parliament is to walk out and not participate in the sham vote. Today was another example where we disagreed fundamentally with ramming through a decision to establish an investigative procedure that didn't allow for a debate in the House. Now, I think that's wrong. Okay, I know some elements of the media have sought to say, are you getting together, are you coalescing? Well, let's do that.
Billy Barry would have been proud of the choreography in this one.
Peter, shoulder to shoulder with Gerry Adams and Sinn Féin, but it wasn't a photo opportunity.
We tweeted a photo of it.
Well, sure, very good. But
you,
I mean,
you can see that now. People see how choreographed it was.
Yeah, well, there was no choreography. We decided to walk out. A decision was taken that we needed to explain to the media to highlight the way in which the government, using their supermajority, are abusing that position in the Dáil.
Hold on a second. You cannot say it wasn't choreographed. Micheál Martin
and Gerry Adams, Mick Wallace, Catherine Byrne, Peter Matthews, and others.
Are you saying this wasn't arranged beforehand?
We just walked together because there was a press conference organised. Collectively, as we walked from the chamber, we said, OK, we need to brief the media, highlight the fact that the government were abusing their dominant position, and we said we'd walk onto the plinth. Was it choreographed?
The text arrived, let me think, about maybe 5 minutes after the Dáil went, the vote took place. So the Dáil actually went into recess, for an hour. Thanks, Peter. You're keeping me on my toes as usual. We're not 3 minutes into this and you're already interrupting everyone. So, I think something like this tends to happen. In fairness, it is easier for them to brief the media as a whole. But the spectre of Micheál Martin, when he's already trying to claim that the party won't do business with Sinn Féin, you know, standing shoulder to shoulder in the plinth, that very photo being kind of tweeted and retweeted,
you're grimacing at that, Timmy Dooley.
No, what I'm saying is we cooperate on issues that are important from an opposition perspective. It includes Peter. It includes the diversity of people in opposition. Nobody is suggesting that Clare Daly and Mick Wallace are about to join forces with Sinn Féin and Micheál Martin, but yet they stood shoulder to shoulder.
Well, it's very different. Micheál Martin said before Christmas, and I brought this up with a number of Fianna Fáil TDs in before me over the last number of weeks. He said before Christmas that he believed that Sinn Féin were being still run from Belfast by the IRA, yet he's walking shoulder to shoulder with Gerry Adams and Sinn Féin colleagues today. Is there anything wrong with that?
But don't forget, Gerry Adams has a mandate in Dáil Éireann. I respect that. Micheál Martin respects that. But there's a difference between respecting Gerry Adams' mandate as an opposition party leader and suggesting because we happen on one or two occasions to share a common objection to the way in which the government are abusing their dominant position, to jumping then and saying that somehow negates a statement by Micheál Martin that Sinn Féin are being still run by the IRA.
Okay, I can't ask Micheál Martin because he's not here. Do you believe that Sinn Féin are being run by the IRA from
Belfast? Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And you have no problem then standing shoulder to shoulder with people of that regard, if you believe that?
I do believe that. But Gerry, I must also respect that Gerry Adams has an electoral mandate. As a Southern Republican, I respect the mandate that he has, and where we share a common disregard.
Do you have evidence? Because Sinn Féin, if they were here, I'll come to Peter Matthews in just a second. If they were here, Sinn Féin would be hopping up and down, saying this is outrageous. That statement is outrageous, that they're being run from Belfast by the IRA. You say you believe that. Do you have any shred of evidence?
Well, I think over a period of time, it's very clear that the position being taken by Gerry Adams and the Sinn Féin representatives in the Dáil is all the time watching and observing what's happening in the North.
Do you have evidence now?
Well, I can't come out and provide documentary evidence. I mean, the IRA, we're told, no longer exists. But I think it's fair to say
then?
That. Well, I know I believe it to be. I believe it to be true. Whilst
without
I can't
evidence.
Provide you with. No, I think it's fairly clear the way in which the Sinn Féin party and their advisors operate from effectively from the Northern Command. I think people who were clearly leaders of the IRA, even though, of course, Gerry Adams continues to maintain that he was never in the IRA. Again, I don't think that's a sustainable position.
Okay, Peter Matthews.
But I mean, I don't take from the fact that he has an electoral mandate. We do live in a democracy down here. We happen to share today and once in the past a complete objection, I suppose, to the way in which the government railroaded through using their dominant position, something
okay,
which we fundamentally disagree
with. Peter Matthews
wants
to come in on that point, I think.
I do. I want to just go over the last 48 hours in Dáil Éireann, actually.
Quickly now.
Yesterday, Sinn Féin objected and voted against a bill that would have brought in a constitutional safeguard for parliamentary representation in this country. It was significant because yesterday was the 70th anniversary of the Auschwitz commemoration. And Germany, after World War II, Auschwitz, you know, 1.1 million people died there. And the liberation was on the 27th of January, 1945. Yesterday was the 27th of January. And at the start of business, in the order of business, I called on the Cean Chorla to ask, to invite the Taoiseach to call the members of the House to 1 minute silence in commemoration of those million people. Jewish people, ethnic minorities, homosexuals, and so on.
And it was refused.
It was.
Okay.
And he said...
Sorry, quickly, what's your point on this?
The point on this is that the bill that had to be voted on yesterday carried forward from Friday, and it is a 27-worded bill which would introduce a safeguard section into the Constitution, which was written, actually, into the German Constitution.
Okay. And you've
after
made
World
that point
War II.
A number of times, but come back to today.
No, hold on.
No, Peter, I want to come
Fianna
back to today.
Fianna Fáil voted on that and supported it
okay.
without a whip.
Okay, I understand that we'll come to that later on, I promise. But today, you walked out as well. Why?
For the simple reason that Timmy has articulated, that there was an abuse of power. Fine Gael and other parties are abusing the dominance of a leadership.
How today?
Because there was the revelation that letters written by the firm Gallagher Shatter to the Cean Chorla was a new arrival of new information that fed into the decision by the Cean Chorla, who is totally independent of Dáil parties and all the rest, into a decision that there would be no debate on something that merited a debate. It's as simple as that.
Owen Murphy, was the debate stifled?
Am I right to me there? No, this was a stunt, and unfortunately it undermines the independence of the Dáil and the authority of the Cean Chorla, because this is an independent ruling of the Cean Chorla, supported by the last Cean Chorla, who's from the Fianna Fáil party. They tried to exercise their office in an independent manner, and that was abused today. We saw it from Sinn Féin before when there was a vote to expel Mary Lou from the chamber and she did not leave. That undermines the authority of the parliament, of the democratic vote of the parliament. And we saw it again today when a ruling from the Cean Chorla was just simply ignored by Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil, and together they marched out.
But a debate was due, wasn't it?
There's complications here around substance and there's legal issues around
Sorry?
This. There's complications around this and legal issues.
Okay, we'll tease that out.
As to what's happening.
But am I correct in saying that a debate on the issue, Gorda Operations and Cabin Mon, was due today?
No, my understanding
was...
In the Dáil and Shannon, that's correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so these letters that are circulating, that the allegations are that there are letters between Alan Shatter, the Taoiseach and the Cean Chorla. Are you aware of the existence of those letters?
Yeah, I mean, that was discussed today in the Dáil.
And yesterday, Mick Wallace's question was denied with a head shake by the Taoiseach to indicate that no was the answer.
These letters exist, is that right?
Well, my understanding from what I heard in the chamber today is that the Cean Chorla was written to and the Taoiseach's office was also written to and the Cean Chorla made a ruling. I'm not sure what the actual standing order is.
What's in the letters?
I haven't seen them.
So these debates were cancelled today over secret letters?
Not secret letters. I understand that there's a civil court case due, and that because of that court case, again, this is what I understand from what I heard in the chamber today, Alan Shatter's firm wrote to the Cian Corla and to the Taoiseach, and as a result, the Cian Corla felt he had to make a ruling under the standing orders. In relation, I think...
But are they published? Are they going to be published, these letters?
I don't know. I haven't seen them.
Are you not disconcerted by that?
Oh, no, I'm very interested in what happened today. I'm very interested in the idea that we might go about establishing an inquiry without a full debate in the Dáil about that. I mean, that's important for the Dáil too. It's important if this inquiry...
Did you ask what's in the letters?
I haven't had an opportunity to speak to the Taoiseach.
You did give an outline.
No, Cormac, I haven't had an opportunity.
Did you not see him today?
No, I didn't. I was in the banking inquiry.
Did you ask anyone else in Fine Gael?
I've been speaking to colleagues about it, but this came to light in the chamber. Not anyone I spoke to.
So everyone in Fine Gael is in the dark about these
letters? No, that's not what I said.
You were in the chamber, Owen?
I wasn't in the chamber at the time, no. I was watching it on my monitor from my office.
You were in the chamber, Timmy?
Cormac, this came to light in the chamber. I saw what was happening. I didn't get a chance to go to the parliamentary party meeting this evening.
This came to light mid-afternoon. It's now almost a quarter past ten. Did you approach the Cian Corla's office about this?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
Because I was working on other issues at the time. I mean,
did you not think it was important enough? We have had, on a very serious issue, a national parliamentary debate cancelled because of letters that you know nothing about, yet you didn't see fit to approach the Cian Corla's office.
No, I haven't had the opportunity to speak to anyone about it because of the way my day was scheduled today. But I do respect the Cian Corla's office, and I respect the ruling that he's made. I mean, we have to have that faith in the chairman of the
Eamon Ryan.
What you said at the start, this is just a stunt. Everything you've said since points in a different direction. That this is there is an issue here. In this state, the ability for us to carry out an inquiry is increasingly challenged. We've just seen the Flood Tribunal in disarray, effectively, because the process wasn't done right. We have the PAC, the legal case has been taken by the PAC, including someone who's central to the whole Fine Gael election campaign, who's returned back into the fold. We have the DPP, as I understand it, looking to challenge the way Irish newspapers are using certain tapes in terms of Anglo tapes and so on. And we have the former Minister of Justice taking, as I understand, a legal case against the Taoiseach, against an inquiry was taken into something that involved him. And that same person, in this instance, is writing to the Cian Corla and Taoiseach's office. And as a result of that, the Dáil has refused the ability to have a debate on a very critical inquiry. Now, you, Owen, would be the first person walking out that chamber if you were on the other side of that floor.
No,
because that's not a small issue. That's not unimportant.
I think it's wrong
in a country where our ability to inquire into issues of public importance is not working.
Eamon, I don't
You're
disagree.
Right, Eamon, and that's why I also walked
Eamon,
out
I
straight away.
I don't disagree, but I think it's disingenuous to say that this is the government pushing this through. This is a ruling from the Cian Corla. Unfortunately, the Cian Corla wasn't there today to explain
it. Yeah, and that was a difficulty. And like what the Cian Corla always indicates, where there's any kind of a disagreement about a standing order, he says, OK, I'm just the chair. It's my duty to implement and exercise discretion over the standing orders as they're laid out. If you as a parliament have an issue with them, let the whips get together and change standing orders. He wasn't in a position to address that today. But it's very clear to me that if he was to be consistent in his rulings, and I expect he would be, then the government, there would have been no issue from our point of view, or I'm sure the independent whip's point of view, would have been prepared to address standing orders to allow parliament to participate in a debate which is being established in their name to investigate a matter. Oh, like there's a further point here, and this is, I'm going to put it, make it personal towards yourself, but this is being initiated by a member of your party, a former minister, who's exercising his legal rights to challenge the right of Parliament to establish such an investigation. I think there are fundamental issues that go to the heart of the way in which we establish tribunals. Look, I mean, my party has had its fair share of investigations established over time and has suffered as a result of that. But on all those occasions, an appropriate debate, regardless of who was the subject of the particular investigation, an appropriate debate took place in the House. And I somehow believe that Fine Gael or the Labour Party would not have tolerated it. I think they would have taken more drastic measures than a straightforward withdrawal from the vote and an opportunity to address the media to explain the decision. And some seem to suggest that it was some kind of a facile piece or plea.
Let Owen Murphy respond.
You haven't seen the letter, and the Cian Corla wasn't there to defend the ruling that he made based on the letter that he received. And I think to go out onto the plinth and start blaming the government is disingenuous, and that's why I called it a stunt. I mean, of course, no one's happy with how things proceeded today. No one's happy with the fact that standing orders need to be amended and need to be cleaned up.
There was an opportunity. You see, this is why we took the action, the drastic action that we did. A number of us tried to ask the Taoiseach to just postpone the decision to proceed until next week. This is not an issue that needed to be rammed through the Dáil today. There would have been an opportunity for the Ceann Comhairle, who was unavoidably not present today, to come back, have a discussion with the whips and try and address this. But no, the Taoiseach and his own whip, who was behind him prompting and pushing, no, heads were being wagged and nodded, no chance, we're not interested. Bulldoze this through.
Your party was aware of this because your whips were informed.
We were informed with no right of appeal, no capacity to look at
the case at all.
No, but no capacity to change standing orders. We were just told it's going through tough.
You knew what was happening. You didn't challenge it when you were given the opportunity.
We challenged it in the Dáil today.
Is it not to me only gross hypocrisy from Fianna Fáil? You have used Dáil machinations over many years in power to cut down arguments and cut down debate. You've used the guillotine many times. You've used tribunals, have you not, many times? Whenever there were serious
questions,
you've established tribunals, and whenever there was a question taken about various issues at tribunals in the Dáil, you said, look, the tribunal is dealing with that one. So this is not gross hypocrisy from Fianna Fáil.
No, it's not gross hypocrisy. We established tribunals, we allowed them to run their course, and even while they were running their course, debates on certain matters that arose from time to time were held in the Dáil. We never sought to stifle debate.
Are you not castigating Owen Murphy tonight over something very similar that you did yourselves over 15 years in power?
No, because don't forget that the last election was a watershed where Labour and Fine Gael contested the election on an offering that there was going to be that democratic revolution, that the practices of the past, particularly the guillotining of legislation, particularly the undermining of Parliament as they saw it, was of such importance that it needed to be addressed.
We've gotten
a complete volt face on it.
Sorry, Timmy, only three bills were guillotined last year, 2014.
The most important one, which you're aware of, which is Irish Water, which continues to bedevil the government and the Irish state.
Is this the pot calling the kettle black, or does Fianna Fáil have a valid argument here?
I suppose my experience of Fianna Fáil when they were in government the last time was that they had to be a little bit more conciliatory to the opposition because there were fewer of them. The majority that Fine Gael and Labour has now is such that, you know, when things are rammed through, it really is, you know, it's significant because it's so final. And I think that's what Timmy is saying there. I mean, the points being made are very political. I can only say what I see, you know, in terms of general coverage of the chamber. And it seemed to me today that the point Micheál Martin raised was fairly valid. You know, this is not something that's in front of a jury. It's a circuit court case. It's something that, as Timmy was saying, could possibly be postponed. You know, if the government has sought legal advice, maybe they could go back and have a clarification. But to be honest, it's the spectre, it's the way these things are played out that are kind of unpalatable because it delays business for a few hours. You know, I mean, even today, Leader's Questions, order of business, just simply the Dáil ordering its day took about 2.5 hours.
OK, 51551, we'll move on. There seems to be division in government this evening about the sale of Aer Lingus. Joan Burton of Labour, the Labour Party leader, said tonight at a parliamentary party meeting that she remains to be convinced about the state's selling the state's 25.1% stake in Aer Lingus. Does this spell, in your opinion, Niamh Lyons, trouble for the government?
If the backbenchers aren't happy, then nothing will be done at this point, because I think, you know, the one group of people that the government have to keep on side now are those people that have stood by them the whole way. I think as well, I mean, the whole, you know, sense about Aer Lingus is that guarantees about landing slots won't be worth the paper they're written on if a deal is done in this instance. And it's more than just a money debate. It's the shareholders in this instance are people in the country. It's not about making a profit. It's about the strategic interest of Aer Lingus.
And that's been aired throughout the day today. But there's another issue, Owen Murphy, which relates to Willie Walsh. Willie Walsh was appointed by Minister Michael Noonan as a chair of the NTMA, isn't that right, in 2013? Do I have that correct?
I'm not sure.
I think so. Yes. Is that right, Peter? He's also the head of IAG, which is a group looking to purchase Aer Lingus. Mm-hmm.
That's called the establishment.
I have a serious question for Owen Murphy. Is there a conflict of interest there?
I don't think there is, but again, I wasn't aware that he was in that position. But when you think about, like, Willie Walsh has left Aer Lingus, Christoph Müller has been in since and done an excellent job there. you know, it's very early days. We don't have the full information on this bid, and we don't want to rush to judgment as to actually what's going to happen here.
No, but I want to tease that out with you, if you don't mind. When Michael Noonan appointed Willie Walsh to the board as chair of the NTMA in 2013, he said his role will include the provision of advisory services in relation to commercial semi-states through New Era.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't
think there's a conflict of interest there?
Well, I mean, it sounds what you're saying there, that there is a potential conflict, but then I'd imagine that he'd have to excuse himself from any discussions in relation to Aer Lingus.
As far as I'd heard today, that has happened, that he has excused himself in that regard.
Do you think, Owen Murphy, that he'd have any influence at all over... Would his shadow be cast?
I think you have to be careful what you imply.
I'm not implying anything. You've clarified. He's a chair of the NTMA.
Yeah.
He's also the head of the of IAG. I'm just asking. I don't know. Sure.
Well,
you've told me he's excused himself from...
I said I'd imagine if he was following proper practices, he'd excuse himself from any decision-making in relation to that. If you're asking me if he'd use another way to get in on the decision-making or use his influence... I've no idea in that regard, but you can't cast those aspersions against someone.
I haven't cast any.
Oh, no, fair enough.
I'm just saying. You know. What do you make of that, Eamon Ryan?
I just think one thing I said, this is only early days. There have been six bids for Aer Lingus in the past 3 years. Like, Joan Burton, this is just not sneak up on her tonight at the parliamentary party meeting, the Labour Party, where she suddenly doesn't know about the issue. I mean, sorry, this has been one of the most obvious bids coming in. And I think the fact that she's saying that tonight, I would say it's probably dead. It's probably that I can't see how Labour would be able to change tack, because they know, you know, there's 66 bids and 3 years looking at this. What has suddenly changed?
She's still leaving room to manoeuvre, isn't she?
She remains to be convinced, she said. Yeah, but there's not much room to manoeuvre there. I don't think we should sell it. I think for two reasons. Firstly, I think it's a good airline in terms of having an airline which has a public ownership in it. I find the staff and the way it's run. It's just, if I'm flying, I like flying Aer Lingus. And I think, why would you change something that in my mind works? Secondly, I would worry about that in the long run for the consumer, this may not be good. Because at the moment, we have three airlines going across the Irish Sea, Ryanair, Aer Lingus and British Airways. Going back down to two, you have less competition, you have less choice. And I'm not so sure the experience in either the KLM Air France merger or in the Iberia British Airways merger previously shows that you get huge efficiencies or huge gains. So I think the business case and the political case hasn't been made.
Okay, but the politics...
I think it doesn't matter, because I think the politics, Joan Burton tonight, I find it very hard to see her running back from
that. Is it dead in the water, Peter Matthews, in your opinion?
Cormac, to be quite frank with you, I don't particularly want to talk about this. This is like deck chairs on the Titanic. What has happened in the last 48 hours in Dáil Éireann is far more sinister.
I understand. No, do you want to give an opinion then?
No, I want the people of Ireland to be alerted to the fact that what Niamh said, the vast majority of the present government has arrived at the point where they show contempt
okay.
for the best interests of the whole Irish people.
I'll come back to you.
I want two minutes at some stage. I'll stay quiet
to explain to the people. Timmy Dooley, politically, is the Aer Lingus deal dead in the water then as a result of what Joan Burton has said?
I think over the course of the last 48 hours that the Labour Party have come to the realisation that politically the sale of Aer Lingus is not sustainable. For the past number of days they've been talking about seeking assurances about landing slots and job retention, believing that they could get some hardwired guarantees. I think the opposition within Dáil Éireann has been strong towards alerting the travelling public and the Irish people that any such guarantees would not be sustainable, even in the short term, let alone into the medium term. I think it would be the wrong decision. I agree totally with what Eamon Ryan has said. I think the strategic interest of the an island nation with direct access to a global network of cities through Heathrow as an important hub is really important from a foreign direct investment point of view, from a tourism point of view, and one which we have.
Okay, but it's gone. It's going downstream, Owen Murphy.
When I say it's early stages in the bid, it's because all we have is a prospective share price and a press release. We don't have the details of actually what IAG would want to do with the business.
We also have high-level meetings happening today and tomorrow.
Yeah, and as a shareholder, the government can't say too much because it can't be seen to unduly influence the share price. But, I mean, in relation to the strategic considerations, they're incredibly important. Could we do something with the Heathrow slots? Would it be necessary? Perhaps it wouldn't. But even if we wanted to, I mean, legally we could have have certain concessions in terms of the, you know, first rights to buy if they're ever to be sold.
Is this, but again, is all this a moot point, though? Labour say they remain to be convinced. Is it dead in the water?
Well, I mean, there are difficulties in Fine Gael as well. But the point being that as a shareholder, we have an obligation to actually, you know, accept the approach, look at the details, and then come to a considered decision. So
you don't have an obligation to accept the approach.
I think we do.
No, you don't have
a... the board of Aer Lingus has recommended, so I think then it goes to ourselves and to Ryanair and to Etihad.
You could dismiss it out of hand.
Well, I don't think that would be clever to, without even seeing the details of a possible deal.
You say strategically it's important. Why not dismiss it out of hand then?
Well, because strategically there might be benefits to it. For example, because we've got pre-clearance to the US, you could see, and because Heathrow is so busy that...
What about the staff?
But I mean, if I could just finish my point, I mean, beginning with the strategic reasons, you might see strategic benefits. You might not see competition benefits, so you might reject it on that point. You might not see staff retention benefits. You might look at Iberia and say, well, staff were lost in that case. Or you might say, well, actually, Iberia is a completely different airline, a much bigger one, and they have different difficulties.
There's different things to consider. Explain to me the strategic benefits.
Well, all I'm saying is potentially there's a strategic benefit because we have pre-clearance to the US. So you can leave from Ireland and go straight in without having to go through customs on the other side. That we could be used as a transatlantic hub for bigger airlines who aren't using it at the moment. I mean, this is just thinking it through. I don't know what IAG is coming with to the table. Okay. And that's why I think we shouldn't just dismiss it out of hand.
Niamh Lyons, Peter Matthews raised the issue of the workers there. Mm. If Labour tonight are saying from their parliamentary party meeting, I remain to be unconvinced, is this Labour then saving the jobs of the workers within Aer Lingus, saving possibly Shannon Airport and Cork Airport and so on?
Yeah, and I suppose we don't know that even there would be fewer jobs and fewer landing slots. Maybe there'd be more. Maybe that's the type of deal that would be brokered. But is any government willing to take that risk in the run-up to a general election? The idea that you might have people being laid off in the few months beforehand as a deal is done and you know, a particular route or even airport is mothballed. To be honest, particularly when you have both parties getting in the ear this evening at different parliamentary party meetings, it will be kind of, you know, delay and hope that it goes away for the time being. But I suppose the other issue here as well is, you know, Ryanair, if they pulled out in the morning, what is our, you know, what is that shareholding worth to us as well? There are different things that have to be weighed up and considered in this whole debate.
But I wonder, Timmy Dooley, is this, will Aer Lingus workers, for example, say that this is Labour tonight, if this is true, saving in part the mess that Fianna Fáil created in 2006 when Fianna Fáil privatised Aer Lingus?
What do you mean by the mess that Fianna Fáil created in 2006?
According to Aer Lingus workers, I said.
Well, the fact of the matter is that Aer Lingus had a very difficult period of time for at least a decade, if not longer, before privatisation. It had been through various different rescue plans. There were a lot of issues. There were a lot of IR issues. There were funding issues. And the state, under state aid rules, was in a difficult position that it couldn't continue to subvent a state airline that really didn't have a commercial
down to brass tacks. Will people down to brass tacks? Will people in your own constituency in Clare tonight say thank God for Labour because they have pulled the plug on this? They have saved Shannon. They have saved Aer Lingus jobs when Timmy Dooley didn't in 2006.
I don't mind what people think or who they accredit for the saving Aer Lingus. It's the right decision. Now, whether or not Labour...
Is that not hypocritical?
No, it's not. It was the right decision to privatise Aer Lingus and to retain a 25% interest. Don't forget now that Aer Lingus is operating commercially very well. It has grown from the time it was privatised in terms of passenger numbers from 7 to 11 million. It's no longer the basket case that it was. It's in a very strong position to the extent that IAG are worth it.
That's the right decision. Will people say this is hypocrisy from Fianna Fáil?
The right decision
to privatise 75% of the airline in 2006, leaving it vulnerable to commercial attack as is happening now.
It's called a commercial turnaround.
I know.
And it's successful,
but it's my view that had it remained in entirely in state ownership, and you've the continued difficulty with IR issues, the inability of the state to invest in its loss-making entity, would have seen it go to the brink and probably end up in bankruptcy. So I think the actions that were taken by the government has saved it, has made it a very strong contender, and I think that the right decision is to continue with the retention of the 25% stakeholding.
Is that the right decision, Eamon Ryan, I wonder? Or is Aer Lingus now going to be open to commercial attack after commercial attack, i.e. a total buyout?
It's you can't be exact or precise in this. You're looking into the future of an industry that's highly volatile, where we've seen airlines like Swiss Air go bust, Sabena, the Belgian Air go bust, a whole load of national air carriers went down. But I actually think Aer Lingus, other people are coming and saying we can do great things, we can build up a new route, be it to the States or elsewhere. And I kind of, to a certain extent, say to myself, well, why can't it be done with a 25% state share? What's wrong with keeping a certain public interest in it? And I think there is actually something to merit. I think for a number of reasons, partly, as I said at the very start, it is maybe an emotional collection in my mind, where I have grown up with Aer Lingus as a national flag carrier, which I see as something about our country that belongs to us. And I like that. And I think, but it has... They have turned around. They have got over the most difficult, and there's still some legacy pension issues that have to be managed. Some pensioners that were really left badly down. There may be workers in the company who want to sell the business because they get a big financial benefit possibly out of it. So this will not be, I don't think it's an easy political one way or the other.
You said to me the last time you were in here, Eamon Ryan, that capitalism is broken as well. We had a conversation around that. Mm. Is this capitalism gobbling up a state asset?
Yeah, and that's why I think we should keep a public share. That's why I think there's actually, you can have public enterprise. And I think there's a history in this country going right back to the, right through the state, where public enterprise actually delivers. And that's one of the main reasons where I say keep a 25% stake. There's nothing wrong with public enterprise.
Okay, 51551, we'll move on again, because there was much controversy about the anti-Irish water protest last week. You heard it all today. You heard it on this programme last night as well, where the president was berated by various protesters. And we had that clip of audio, which is going around on the internet as well. There's a protest organised for next Saturday as well, I believe, in various locations throughout the country. Timmy Dooley of Fianna Fáil. Does Fianna Fáil still want Irish water to be abolished at this stage, or do you support the protests on Saturday?
Well, what we've said all along with Irish water, that we failed to understand why there was a necessity to create this mega entity with all the cost structures associated with it. And our counter proposal was to allow the county councils to continue to do the work with a coordination capacity, a relatively slim operation, something along the lines of the National Roads Authority, that would have had the capacity to work with local authorities, that would be in a position to get the kind of borrowings in place that Irish Water has
okay,
said.
Okay, that was the argument before the bill was enacted. The bill now is enacted.
Yeah.
So do you support the abolition of Irish Water even still? Do you support these protests on Saturday?
Well, I support people's right to protest if they're not happy with the decision of the government. Of course I do.
That's
I recognise that.
Do you support the protest? Not the right to protest. Do you support the protest and what they stand for?
Yeah, I support people who are annoyed with government, who have decided to go ahead with something which I think is not in the best interest of the state, is not going to resolve the issue. I mean, we have the issue.
Is it not a dead duck? Irish water is there.
Well, it might be.
The bill is enacted.
Well, there are two things that seem to me to be dead ducks. The $500 million that was invested in water meters, which are now buried in the ground and are of no benefit or purpose or use, and the government have decided that. But we're still not through the whole charging mechanism, because you'll be aware of the report, the draft report from the European Commission, which has indicated their concerns about this conservation grant. I mean, there's a document which I know we have obtained under Freedom of Information from the Department of Social Welfare, which are effectively saying to the environment, you know what? We're not in a position to do this. We don't have the expertise to give back this €100. So that looks like a mess in terms of the operation on this end.
But
what's a real mess,
Timmy Dooley, is that we have thousands of people in the country who have a dirty water supply.
Yeah.
Cryptosporidium going into their supply, lead in their water supply as well. Should Fianna Fáil not at this stage say, look, Irish water is there, it's the law, let's row behind it, and whatever you want to achieve at the protests on Saturday is not going to happen?
Well, here's the issue, Cormac. From 2000 to 2010, the then government invested about $500 million a year in our water infrastructure. I accept that probably wasn't enough. We needed to have done more. But with the establishment of Irish Water, over the next 4 to 5 years, they're only going to invest about 300 to 400 million in the water infrastructure. So with the establishment of this mega quango, with all the consultants and with all the cost structures and with all the bonuses, there will actually be less money invested in improving the infrastructure. So now, like, I can understand why people will be on the streets on Saturday.
Eamon Ryan, the bottom line is that we'll have a water infrastructure, a body looking after water infrastructure, and we will over time have money to finance, surely, Irish Water. Do you support Irish Water now, or do you support the protests on Saturday?
I don't support the nature of the protests on Saturday. I was watching the video of it, and I just think that sort of protest does not do good for the cause that they're actually arguing for. I think...
I'm talking about the protests next Saturday.
Next Saturday. Yeah. No, I'm afraid I do believe... I mean, I find it hard I believe we should pay for water. It's not for free. And in fact, I don't know that anyone disagrees with that. This is an argument about how you pay for it rather than whether you pay for it, whether it's direct taxation or whether it's paid by use. I think it should be paid by use because I think you can get savings from that that help you reduce the amount you use and overall and use less money. So I think the government got it badly wrong. I think even at this stage, you could retain Irish Water as a billing and a metering company, but actually still go back to a different approach in terms of delivering the infrastructure, which I think would be better.
You still want to fundamentally change Irish Water?
I would keep the company because it's been set up for the billing and payment system, but I would like to go back to a river basin district regional approach, yes. But
is that not fanciful at this stage?
No, it's not. It's perfectly possible that you can, just in the same way the company was created and reorganised, you could at a future date maintain the centralised billing system and put in a regional system. But can I go back just on the issue of protests? Because I do think it's important in terms of the nature of the protests the other day with the President. And it wasn't just in relation to what was said to President Michael Dee or putting him up on a pedestal where no one can say anything about him. But just the video watching it, you look at that sort of level of aggression, that sort of level of intimidation of the guards as well. I think to a certain extent, as I said, it undermined the case of likes of Paul Murphy and others. Because anyone watching this, you look and say, geez, you'd feel sorry for the guards in those circumstances. Like, how do you keep your cool? How do you not boil up and react by being violent back? Which is what maybe some people might want. And I just think if we go down that route, that's not clever
for
this country.
Paul Murphy said, for clarification, in this programme last night that he didn't support the tone or the personal remarks during those protests. What do you make of this, Niamh Lyons, politically? Because it's the government's on a sticky wicket with Irish Water. The deadline for registration is fast approaching.
Yeah, and that will be a real challenge for them because obviously they'll have far fewer people registered than they expected. I mean, even if it comes in at 90%, they've dealt with the so-called can't pays. They've put as many things as they're going to put in place now, I would imagine. It's the people who are refusing to pay that they'll have to deal with next. And I suppose, again, in the run-up to a general election, the appetite to have people visited by the sheriff or hauled before, I don't even know how they'll do it. I mean, they're not cutting off water. This isn't a charge that's going to be collected by revenue, so they can't really go down any of those type of routes.
And that's a huge problem.
Means that for people who are paying it, you know, the mentality goes out that if they didn't bother, that they would get away with it too. And that's, you know, for it undermines completely the Irish Water. And
that's a major problem for the government, Don Murphy, isn't it? Because you have a huge number of people in the country still who haven't registered. What happens if they don't?
Yeah, I think we're at about 65% registered at the moment, which isn't enough. And the deadline we have at the beginning of February isn't a fixed one. People can continue to register after that. But I think Niamh makes a good point about, you know, when people do sign up and register because they believe that we should pay for water resources, Eamon was saying, I think that is necessary, and others don't, why do those people who are paying have to shoulder the burden for people who won't sign up? I don't think that's fair on them.
So what should happen?
Well, I mean, there are measures in place if people don't register with Irish Water. I think in terms of you then register the amount against the property and they won't be able to get the grant from social protection.
€100.
Yeah, which would make a difference for the price they would pay.
Isn't that a pitiful sanction?
I don't think so. For some people, it won't be. It'll be that's why people, a lot of people, I think, as we approach February, are signing up because they want to make sure that they can get that €100 for this year to help manage their water
bill. Do you accept that the government has made a hames of the deadline process, even? The deadline for registration?
No, I think actually it's a good approach to have a flexible deadline.
But look at the flexibility. The first deadline was the 30th of October. Mm-hmm. The second deadline was the 30th of November. Then we had the end of January. Now we had the 3rd of February.
But those deadlines.
Hold on, no. You said yourself, it's not fixed as well. Then we have the 10th of February. Is that the deadline, is it?
We have a deadline on the trip.
No. So what's the next step?
My understanding is that people who choose to register with Irish Water will always be able to do that. It just, depending on the point in time they register, it might have a problem for their billing, if they're using a meter, in terms of how much they're getting charged, and then if they'll be able to get the social protection water conservation grant if they
don't register by the 10th of February, does that preclude them from getting the €100?
What we've been told is that it's going to have difficulties for the administration of putting them onto the system, and it may, but okay. It hasn't been clarified.
Look, people mightn't register until June 2016. Sure, they may or may not get the €100.
If they don't obviously do it in this year, they're not going to get the €100 for this year.
For this year, yeah. But it doesn't stop them getting the €100 on an ongoing basis.
No, but then I think the charge from the first year will be levied against them, their property, for a future date.
So people, the 300,000 people who haven't registered yet, maybe more, they're listening to you tonight and they're saying, what's the sanction for if I don't register? And there may be no sanction at all.
No, but for people who are saying that they can't afford to pay, and if that is true, then these are significant sanctions for them. They won't be, that will make a difference. And you go back to someone like Paul Murphy and the comments that he's made. I mean, it stands in total contradiction to him standing in the street and blocking Joan Burton's car and inciting people to break law and to bring fines upon themselves that they may not be able to pay.
But Peter has a note he's passing to pupils in class. What's your point, Peter, on this one?
Well, I was wondering, were we going to get to 11 o'clock without actually touching on some of the real meat of what this political contempt that the strongest ever majority coalition government has shown to the Irish people. Gerry Adams said it today, there's 500,000 people emigrated. The hospital trolleys are full at record levels. The mortgage distress is huge, 90,000 families on housing waiting lists. And if you add up all those dots, Cormac, I'm going to talk to you very simply, raw horse, that a bill that was dismissed with contempt and not even debated last Friday was voted under whip by the government today. Fair dues to Fianna Fáil, who actually withdrew a whip and allowed their members to vote for the best piece of proposed legislation.
Are you talking about your own conscience?
It's not my own conscience, Bill Neave, and don't dismiss it.
We're not even talking about it.
It is what's in the
journal.
Well, I'm telling you, this is where the stem of all our troubles lies. It actually lies.
But the interesting point of this is that on the back
of that,
Peter,
can I please, on the back you've given everybody else 5 minutes.
On the back of that, you said you'd join Fianna Fáil, wouldn't you?
No, I didn't. I said the obstacles to joining any party are removed by a party that removes the whip on this particular recital. Now, can I give you an example of Mick Wallace and Claire Daly, who've done the best delivery to the Irish people in the last 24 months? They have actually thrown light on the shortcomings, and that's the kind word, of the Garda and also the Department of Justice. And they did it despite the opposition of the Taoiseach, the Minister for Justice, and all the establishment, and all the backbenchers being told what to do. They actually did what this bill says. They served the Irish people, the whole people, without orders and instructions and with responsibility to no one except their own conscience.
Peter, we're talking about Irish Water here. Can I ask you, in conscience,
would you
have voted through Irish Water in its original form
in 2013
as a matter of conscience if you were still in Fine Gael?
I'm telling you, Niamh, back in 2013, the government backbenchers didn't even think. Do you know what they did yesterday? They didn't even know what they were voting on. They didn't even know it.
You would have been one of those people.
And I can tell you this, truthfully, that Mary Lou MacDonald told me yesterday, she told me that, yes, Mick and Claire delivered for the Irish people in exact compliance with the wording of that safeguard for the Irish Constitution. She said, but that's the way I operate, Peter. And I said, well, Mary Lou, why don't you support the bill then? And she realised she'd actually banged herself into the wall.
You could actually, Peter Matthews, address your question directly to Owen Murphy, because this is Owen...
Well, actually, Cormac, it's hard
to... Owen Murphy, sorry. This is a matter you're charged with.
I've been watching the second hand.
Hold on a second,
2 minutes haven't
Peter,
gone by. Timmy talked about water for 4 minutes nonstop.
Hold on a second, please.
Yeah.
Owen Murphy, you've been charged with examining Dáil reform by the Taoiseach, have you not? Is this something you'd be interested in?
I've been looking at Dáil reform since I went in there, and it's one of the reasons I got involved in politics. And, this is a little late in the day to have a detailed conversation about whip reform. But, Peter, I'm sorry. If there hadn't been a whip, no one would have supported your bill in Fine Gael, because we don't agree with it. Sorry, and Owen, the Chief Whip gave a very good response to your bill in the chamber.
I can tell you, I can tell you with hand on heart that individual members of your party told me they agree with it.
Well, maybe they were being polite.
They weren't being polite. They were being very serious. And they're very unsatisfied with the way the whip has been over
vice gripped.
No, but
this isn't about the whip. Your bill doesn't mention the whip. You're talking about conscience votes, which we don't agree with.
It's not conscience votes. You're not reading it correctly.
You're transposing direct wording from the German constitution into the Irish.
Owen,
about almost
Owen, it takes it's 27 words. Listen to them, please. Just listen to them. Okay. The members of each house of the Oireachtas, that's our parliament, shall be representatives of the whole people, not bound by orders or instructions, and responsible only to their conscience, not to the Ayatollah, not to the Pope, not to a party leader, not to anybody, except their alert conscience. Nobody said that there won't be methods of operation for party agreements, party groupings and things like that. The Germans do it. They reunify their own country.
Let him respond to that. He's charged with looking at this.
And the Lithuanians have it. And the Czech Republic have it. And the Estonians have it.
You know, we've had a number of conversations on this in the Fine Gael political party. And Peter, you and I have spoken about it as well.
No, Owen. You haven't. We haven't spoken. We've briefly touched on it, and you've said you've been busy, and you didn't even come to the debate last Friday.
Sorry, Peter. Look,
you didn't even come to the debate.
Let him respond,
Peter.
Look,
I've been having your own internal about that. To be fair here, okay?
Yeah. I am being fair.
This is like an internal Fine Gael.
I've had so far. I'm watching the clock. 4 minutes. 4 minutes out of the total today.
Look, it's really important that we loosen the whip in Irish politics of political parties. It's important that we transfer more powers.
I didn't say loosen the whip. I said just put that in for a safeguard.
We don't agree. That's why we don't agree with it. We need to transfer more powers from the executive to the Dáil, to strengthen the Dáil as a watchdog on the government. Because the whole point of a parliamentary democracy is that no small group of people should have the monopoly on power, and no small group of people knows everything. They don't get everything right. So you need to have a parliamentary system there that can hold that government to account. But at the same time,
not working.
At the same time, I as a member of the Oireachtas stand on a platform and I'm elected for Fine Gael. And I can choose to go in with my Fine Gael colleagues and vote the same way with them. And I can choose to do that. What we're arguing for in the backbenches of Fine Gael is not a conscience vote. It's a principle of an independent Dáil that orders its own business. To start there, a principle where in committees you can put down amendments and you can vote for those amendments and try and get them
into the committee. Now, Owen, here's something to remember, because I'd forgotten it, but somebody reminded me a week ago in the lead up to this bill, that in around about July, or June, July of 2013, the leader of your party, now the Taoiseach, said to members of your party that in regard to the two then critical pieces of legislation going through the houses, which was one, the abolition of the Shannon, and the other, the protection of life, that if anybody went off party line, they would never be run as a candidate in future elections. That's not democratic. That's not parliamentary representation. That's ugly.
I want to bring in Timmy Dooley of Fianna Fáil, because you have been highly critical of the Fine Gael and Labour government for lack of reform. But now Owen Murphy has been charged with looking at Dáil reform. Do you believe it's going to happen?
Well, sure. Like, we're in the run into the next election, and I suspect Fine Gael and Labour will try and rehash to some extent the promises that they made prior to the last election, reheat them and re-present them and hope that the Irish people won't have forgotten. I think the Irish people have moved on. They've recognised that what they were promised is not delivered.
Is that what's happening?
And Parliament continues to be sidelined. Unfortunately,
afraid of parties. They won't be now.
Corporate donations. We had an extensive list of reforms in our programme for government. Corporate donations are now banned in Irish life. 30% of candidates in the next election will be women. You removed freedom of information rights. We brought them back in. There's going to be a register for lobbyists. They're going to say who they're meeting. Whistleblowers will be protected. We've new powers for Oireachtas committees, pre-legislative scrutiny. The Friday sitting, I got to bring in a bill myself on tax transparency. I got to bring in a bill on smarter transport, which is adopted by Leo Varadkar. These are all positive improvements. Do we need to do more? Of course we do.
He says you're reheating old promises.
We're not reheating. We haven't gotten to do it. I mean,
three of your colleagues from the entire government parties came in to last Friday's debate.
We focused on
and
the
nobody
jobs.
Spoke.
And
we
focused Eamon Ryan wants to get in on this. Let's hear Eamon Ryan.
Insulted the bill by not even addressing
it. Eamon Ryan.
I was very glad to see that corporate donations legislation brought in, because we drafted it, and I'm glad that Fine Gael and Labour picked it up and implemented it. I was also glad that the mandate quota to have female representation in each party was introduced, because that was also drafted by the Green Party in the last government and picked up, in fairness, by Catherine Lynch and implemented. So fair enough. But what I really object to in terms of what's happened in the last 3 years is we had a vote of the Irish people saying we wanted to hold on to our Seanad, and there was clearly a message in that, clearly a message that we wanted to reform it as well. And the fact that nothing's happened in that, we won't even have a university register that goes beyond the old UCD-TCD breakdown split as if we're living in the 1930s. And the fact that that wasn't done baffles me. That there wasn't that ability to actually listen to what the Irish people said. We want to hold on to our Seanad, don't get rid of it, and reform it. And nothing happened. And the other thing, I think, if there was one thing we could do, I would argue in terms of Dáil reform, and there's lots we could do, but if there's one that I would love to see us doing, is to change our relationship with Europe by giving the parliamentary committees power to actually direct the minister in what they say in the European Council. That overnight would shift the understanding of the Dáil of what's going on in Europe. It would open up Europe to our Oireachtas in a proper way. Other countries do it. There's no reason we couldn't do it. And I think it's getting the committees working. And that would be the first and best way of doing it.
I'll bring Owen back in, but Timmy wants to come in first.
One of the big issues that was in place prior to the last election was the way in which state boards people are appointed to state boards. In fairness to Eamon Ryan, he brought in legislation which dealt with that in a really good way, which gave power to Parliament and to committee. What did you do, Owen? You tried to slip McNulty in the back door to facilitate an appointment.
But
we moved on from that. But I'm saying to you, you promised something at the last election, Owen. We can all say, you know, parties did things in the past, but the last election to me was the watershed. You promised, your party promised that you would reform that whole method, and then you tried to bring, you pre-qualify someone to appear in the Senate. It was appalling, but it was
that was disgraceful as a result. Brendan Helen then came
and then we have
with
this,
the public appointments.
And then we have this issue of the Friday sittings. And with the exception of your own bill, quite frankly, it's been a sham. People get to publish their bills. They're given their 2 hours on a Friday, and then the government just parked them on the order paper. They never get to progress beyond
there. When Fianna Fáil was in power, there was very little happening on a Friday at all, sure.
But sure, look at the point. I've said the last election was a watershed where people said,
Cannot say it was a watershed and forget all the mistakes that Fianna Fáil did when we were in power.
I've accepted them on many occasions. But we're in a new parliament and I have a mandate to represent the Irish people, albeit an opposition. And my role as an opposition deputy is to challenge the government and to make them stand over commitments that were made, and particularly
You cannot complain about doing a couple of hours work on a Friday when you were in power, you were down in County Clare on a Friday.
That's not true. There was a lot of very considerably good work done in the last Parliament. But the point is
not in Dáil Éireann like this.
Well, but you tell me what's being done on a Friday that's great benefit.
Well, we had Timmy, that's really cynical. I mean, you're talking about
the legislation doesn't get,
and you're talking about
the legislation doesn't get progressed.
Look, there's more that we have to do. We need to see those bills go into committee stage, but we have to admit that it's better than what went before.
How many of them went to committee stage in the course of the last 4 years?
They haven't gone. That's what I'm saying. They have to go to committee
stage. That's a
shame. No, but it's a much better improvement than what you had when you were in Parliament before me. Now, on the Friday sitting, debated the Oireachtas.
Yesterday's was killed dead and Paul Keogh didn't even address the bill. It was a contempt for a bill.
It's an opportunity for backbenchers to bring the legislation and have full debate. We also debate committee reports. So they are committee days. And one debate I participated in, which was excellent, was on relation to school admissions, a very important bill going through pre-legislative scrutiny. And they came with a report on that. But just to come back to Eamon's point on strengthening the committees, he's dead right. We need a strong committee system in Parliament, you know, to really give teeth to what the Parliament can do to hold the government to account. And another area I would go to...
Can they be trusted?
Can I remind you something that happened at a committee recently?
PAC has been accused of acting ultra vires beyond its powers.
Well, look, I'm a previous member of the Public Accounts Committee before I joined the Banking Inquiry. I'm actually involved in that court case, so I'm limited in what I can say.
I understand that.
What PAC did.
But we can go back to the last referendum when the people were asked, should Oireachtas committees be given more powers?
Well, they shouldn't
the public
be given,
said no.
They shouldn't be given quasi-judicial powers.
The government has the power to fire people off the committee.
And they were right,
there's eight people who were fired off all their committees.
They were right to say no in that referendum, the people, I think. But what we want, one of the committees, going back to Eamon's point, is a budgetary oversight committee.
Okay, which I think is incredibly important. What do you make of Dáil reform in the lead up to the next election, Niamh Lyons?
There will be a whip, there will be some changes in the whip in Fine Gael, precisely because Lucinda Creighton is offering that to the people who join her new party whenever that will be formed. And I think, you know, you can't really go to the electorate the next time around. You know, when there's such change happening in other parties, but that's how it'll happen. It'll move that slowly, and it'll be on the basis of, you know, what is the shop next door offering?
That's why the European countries actually have said the constitutional safeguard is the way to go. You don't have to calibrate it. Once you've got an overarching mandate, which is that you are a representative of the whole people, not bound by orders or instructions and responsible to your conscience. That's the safe thing. That's what Mary Lou said. She operates to that standard.
So you don't think Fine Gael is serious about reform?
But then it doesn't need to be in the Constitution.
No. Why not?
I don't, because they don't embrace this. But Fianna Fáil have embraced it.
Because they don't embrace your bill.
No, it's not my bill. It's the German Constitution, the Lithuanian.
Isn't in favour of reform.
No, the Lithuanian.
Do you think there's a touch of arrogance to what you're saying?
There's no arrogance. It's another person's. I'm only the purveyor. That's all.
Do you think
it's a cut and paste from Germany?
No, because they had plenty of opportunities to do, you know, any number of things. And the truth is, when a government gets into power, they probably can't govern efficiently unless they, you know, do their business the way we currently see them do their business.
That
means the entire system needs to be changed.
No, they don't. It's a constitutional safeguard.
I'll
be honest, I think Owen Murphy's been given it as a sop, and I think the fact that he's in the same constituency as Lucinda Creighton is a huge...
Cormac, there's about 11 countries in Europe where it works with the constitutional safeguard of the principle. This is what Irish peoples don't seem to be able to actually clear their heads of old habits and old ways of doing things and just have a constitutional safeguard.
I want to pick up on something that Niamh Lyons said there. That's a sop to keep you quiet, Owen Murphy.
I don't agree. I mean, with respect, Niamh, I mean, in 2012 I wrote a pamphlet on Dáil reform, and I've been pursuing the agenda ever since. And in the last term before the Christmas break, I was quite critical of the government on a number of points, one of it being that I felt that it still needed to do a lot more on Dáil reform, particularly around the budget, because not enough had changed since 2008. And the Taoiseach announced 2 weeks ago that we're going to see a budgetary oversight office. Mm. I mean, he came to me before Christmas and said, do a bit of research into this, look at the Constitutional Convention, look at your own work, and come back to me with some proposals. I went and I surveyed the parliamentary party to see what they want to see. I presented those results. That's how that's happened.
Quickly, 30 seconds, Peter Matthews.
An example of how it works. Mick and Clare, did they serve the whole people? Yes. Were they bound by orders or instructions? No. Tick that box. And were they responsible only to their conscience? Yes. So that's how it works.
They didn't like your bill, Peter.
No. They did. Maybe they supported it. They supported it.
No, not them. But I'm talking about the Dáil, the parties in the Dáil, the majority of people.
Why, Niamh? Because they like power. That's why.
Okay, Peter Matthews, do you know
that's
what?
That's why, Niamh. Did you not join up the dots?
Peter Matthews, you have the final word this evening.
Do I?
Are you happy with that?
No, Cormac, it's your show.
Okay.
But you know
we'll
what?
Give the
Thanks
Irish
for giving
Examiner.
Me 4.5 minutes.
We'll
in
give
total
the Irish Examiner the final word. The front page of the Irish Examiner leads with Murphy protest remarks spark anger. Opposition parties unite to defend special status of president. Dáil walkout after Gortha inquiry debate axed. And former Cailte chief executive entitled to €299,000 bonus. High Court rules. Fáilte mé sin é muíochas le Owen Murphy, Timmy Dooley, Peter Matthews, Eamon Ryan, agus Niamh Lyons. Bám dearás, agus dearlog amárach slán agus bánacht.
The Late Debate, presented by Cormac O'Hara, was produced by Jane Murphy. The broadcast coordinator was Michael Lawless. The researcher is Richie Byrne. And sound supervision tonight was by Bryony October.